NYG, whenever we feel like it. It's week three and episode one, but we're back. Before we get into it, we got to take care of the housekeepings. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me, Ethan GSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick and Nick Zeraris. Follow. I'm so rusty. Do it again. Start it over. Unless you just want me to start over and you'll edit it out.
Start over.
Okay. NYG, whenever we feel like it. Ethan, Weiss, Nick, we're here. Week three, first podcast episode. Don't worry about it. Before we get into it, we got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at Ethan GSN, Weiss at NYG Daily, Nick at Nick Zeraris. Subscribe to the pod or everywhere you get your favorite podcasts. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. Kudos to me. That only took me 2 tries to shake the rust off, unlike the Giants, who seem to still be shaking the rust off. All right, gentlemen. The New York Giants are 0-3. They were embarrassed again in prime time against the 0-2 Chiefs. I don't really know where to start. I think, obviously, the exciting news is that as of 2:58 p.m. on Monday afternoon, it is looking increasingly likely that Jackson Dart will be the starting quarterback of the New York football Giants in week four. But I don't think we can really brush past all the bad that we've seen through 3 weeks. So, Weiss, where would you like to start?
I would like to start from the top and look down.
As we do. Can I just say, by the way, I would love to do a podcast with you guys where, for once, we're not talking about the high-level organization. I'd love to be talking about a Tyler Newbin interception or a Drew Phillips pass. But yeah, the game or, yeah. You know, how great Andrew Thomas looked in more than 25 reps. But alas, we must talk about the strategy of using Andrew Thomas for 25 reps and only 25 reps. So anyway, go ahead, Weiss.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a functional operation. Has the same things that we've seen the last couple of years. I think I've grown accustomed to like accurately predicting which ways the Giants are going to mess things up. I didn't predict the kicker part of it, but I predicted exactly how I thought they would come out in the second half. But there's just so much wrong and so many eye-opening indications that, you know, this regime is just it's not a regime that you can expect that will win you games and is this organization is not headed in the right direction. Now, there is the unknown of Jackson Dart, and the unknown brings a level of excitement and a level of intrigue, but this thing is so much bigger than the quarterback, as we've learned now. And in a year where we were expected to see wins and not 0-3 to start, here we are. And it sucks, you know, but we've grown accustomed to this. I'm pretty numb to it now. I'm not angry. I was pretty angry after the Dallas game because I was, you know, you losing to Dallas and losing the way we lost to Dallas. But you know, it's just this is what we've grown accustomed to have to live with now is that this dysfunction, this embarrassment, this, you know, just overall pile of shit that is the New York Giants. And they just continue to find ways to embarrass the fucking hell out of you. And that's all we can say. I mean, what we saw last night is no different than what we saw last year against the Bengals, right? It's no different than what we saw 2 years ago against the Seahawks on Monday Night Football. It's no different than any other recent primetime game. Like, it's the same thing. It's just like there's certain things that are different to it. But the overall point of it is the same thing. It's the same dog shit product. And it's tiring, but, you know, you just – I've grown accustomed to be angry about it during the game. And then when the game is over, I'm just like, oh, whatever. It is what it is. This is what we are.
You're a bigger man than me. Cause I was still angry about it after the game last night, just sitting there in my living room, cleaning, just like, I just honestly pacing. It's one of those depressing feel. It's a feeling that we've come so accustomed to. It's like, you just sort of sit there angry and numb for a little bit. Until Mike Tirico and Chris Collinsworth sign off for your local NBC affiliate, and all of a sudden you're watching the news and it's like, what the fuck just happened? Like, I really don't get it. To me, you know, I go back and forth on like the high level problems with the organization. One minute I want Shane fired. The next minute I think he's doing an okay job. The coaching has just been inexcusable. Like, these three games, this is not like they got blown out. This really isn't. Like week one, you had the Giants defense that held the Commanders to 16 points through three quarters. They 14. Held 14. Okay, so they held the Commanders offense led by Jaden Daniels to 14 points through three quarters. Yesterday held a Chiefs offense to 16 points through basically what amounted to three quarters with numerous opportunities to make plays to get them back in the game. The offensive line, I don't know what the Pro Football Focus numbers say as of this morning, but I know that through 2 weeks, they were an average pass blocking unit. Everyone likes to make excuses that the offensive line's not good. They've been fine. Plenty of quarterbacks succeeding with far worse.
Stafford's in hell out there for the Rams, getting his shit pushed in every week, and he's still cooking. He's still cooking.
Every week. By the way, the Giants would be 3-0 right now if they had Matthew Stafford. But I digress. The narrative is dead. Yes, they would, and I'll tell you exactly how.
It's not because Stafford is a bad quarterback. It's that everything the Giants touch turns to shit. So it doesn't matter. Like they will, there's no world where the Giants.
Listen, if you want to go the superstitious route, then I'm not going to fault you, because at the end of the day, MetLife is built on ancient burial grounds, and everything that touches that arena is cursed. Can't wait for the World Cup, by the way. I mean, the number of players that are going to catch diseases or tear ACLs is going to be through the roof, and they're going to have no other option but to demolish the stadium. But Russell Wilson has not thrown a red zone touchdown. It's been 3 weeks. Nick, we were talking about this pre-show. You said what? There's only one other team.
Houston is the only team with a worse red zone rate, and they don't have one. Houston has yet to score a red zone touchdown this year. They're the only team worse than the Giants in the red zone.
And that's really, to me, what it boils down to two things. It's the quarterback play, and it's the coaching. That's really all it is. And we've spoken ad nauseum about how quarterback play masks a lot of issues, and I think that is absolutely the case with the Giants. Was Andrew Thomas and Jermaine Illuminor didn't allow a single pressure last night. Just they have outstanding play at tackles when both are healthy. And I think if you were to go back in time and give the Giants a do-over, Jackson Dart is your week one starting quarterback. It makes absolutely no sense that you make this guy your game day QB2. Something happens to 38-year-old Russell Wilson. This guy's coming in. Three full seasons starting in the SEC, high pressure environment. You can debate the merits of that offense and what he does and doesn't know about reading an opposing defense. The Giants are not running anything overly complicated out there. If anything, it's too simple. And you go in to the Washington game and you're down by a score late. The Cowboys game. Russell Wilson was 0-for-4 in the red zone. Go down the field, kick a field goal. Go down the field, kick a field goal. Three and out. Turnover on downs. Nick and I just went through the play logs after this. The worst defense in the league before the game decided to take a boatload of methamphetamines in the fourth quarter, and it was just touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. And then Russ throwing just some of the worst interceptions you've ever seen against the Cowboys and against the Chiefs last night. Just backbreaking stuff, really backbreaking stuff. And I'm sorry, like, if this just goes back to my original point, and then I'll let you speak, Nick. If you could give this organization a do-over and say, okay, week one, who are you picking, Jackson Dart or Russell Wilson? It's Jackson Dart, because you almost beat the Commanders. You now know, even though anyone with a brain would have known, that the Cowboys have the worst defense in the league. They make the Bengals look competent. And then if you were to have told them, and then in week three, you're going to be within striking distance of the Chiefs the entire game. All you need is a red zone touchdown, competent quarterback play. You're not telling me that they go, yeah, actually, I think we're going to start Jackson Dart, because now you have Jesse Minter and John Harbaugh coming into MetLife. That defense is fucking crazy. You get the Saints, which should be an easy enough matchup. I think they lose that, because who knows the NFC East and the New York Giants better than Kellen Moore? And what? Then he gets the Broncos and that defense? Like, the easier games have been played. And so, for again, for a guy with all this college starting experience, you know, he's not some sophomore. He's not this raw kid that came out. It makes no sense. It really doesn't.
So what I would say off of that, the first point, the whole point of starting Russell Wilson is that he is supposed to make the right decisions. And you have seen the physical limitations. He cannot move. He cannot extend plays. And he is just a sitting duck in the pocket now. And you don't have that opportunity. You have him throwing up the worst BLT picks imaginable at crucial situations. And there is nothing to be gained from Russell Wilson making those mistakes. To your point, if you start Dart and he is out there and he's throwing the stupid picks, okay, we're not winning the games, but he is getting meaningful experience and he is learning what he can and can't get away with. And I know there are some people who will say, well, you might mess him up if he gets too rattled. You are better off letting the young guy take it on the chin and try and figure it out than starting the old guy who is definitely bad. At this point, you know what Russell Wilson is. Pittsburgh and Denver both gave up on him in really short order. I don't think he's been put in a great position here because the Giants is obviously not a great opportunity. But this is it. Russell Wilson probably will not get another chance to be an NFL starter after this year. There is nothing left there. There is nothing to be gained there. Even if you want to just delude yourself and say, well, Dart can't possibly be worse. Sure. I would much rather Dart try and figure it out and we learn, okay, he's terrible. He can't play. Or, okay, there's some good, there's some bad. We can do something with this. We can do the read option stuff, which they've used him for a couple times here and there. And even if it's not particularly efficient, it's something else. It makes them unpredictable. It's something they don't have in their toolbox right now. And their offense is the most vanilla, boring, uninspired. They're not using play action enough. They're not using motion enough. They're not getting the ball to Malik in space at all. They can't get anybody open in the middle half of the field. At the very least, if Dart is out there getting killed, he is learning something. Russ being out there is purely, okay, we're being respectable. We've got the future Hall of Famer out there. There's nothing to be gained from Russell Wilson playing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way to describe Russ Wilson's a bridge quarterback. This is what bridge
quarterbacks are. That's being polite.
Yeah,
the problem is he's a bridge to an unknown.
He's a bridge to nowhere, yeah.
He's a bridge to we don't know. And at the end of the day,
he's a bridge to the quarterback that they drafted.
I understand why, so I'm being a little facetious, but it's Brian Daboll and Joe Shane effectively putting all their chips in the middle of the table. The two of them have quite literally nothing else to point to as, hey, we've done a really good job. They have one win in their last 15 games. They doubled down on Daniel Jones, who is fucking tearing it up right now. They let Saquon walk. He won a Super Bowl and ran for 2,000 yards. Xavier McKinney, balling out in Green Bay, interceptions left and right. Which one is it? The 2023 draft, absolute disaster. And I was racking my brain last night. I can't really think of a single player that Joe Shane has drafted where – we've gone, okay, they're raw, but they can coach him up and he could become something. There hasn't been a single one of those. If anything, he's had more high-end first-round pick busts than he's had mid-round developed into something nice type players at this point in time. So despite all that, he still managed to put together, I would say, a half-decent defense because they have a dominant defensive line.
And they can't get any sacks, but they have good talent.
Great talent. They're still getting pressure. I mean, all this is more on the coordinator, and we can save that conversation for a different time. Do they have
talent? Because
their secondary is awful.
Their linebackers are very bad, too. They're fine.
You're starting a slightly washed Bobby O and your third stringer because
they don't have depth. And their defense is predicated on one thing and one thing only.
Pressure.
And that is those four guys winning their one-on-ones and getting to the
and they don't all play at the same time either, which is another point.
We'll talk about that.
And then so they don't that's why I don't buy this whole they would have be 3-0 if X was their quarterback, because at no point against Washington did I actually believe that they had a chance of winning that game, even though that
because
was
a 14-6
game. But because of the entire operation. I mean, they were getting stops defensively. They couldn't block anybody. They couldn't run the ball. They didn't know how to scheme guys open. Russ didn't play well. It was his first game. At no point against Kansas City was I like, they're going to win this game. Even when it was 6-6, I was like, yeah, this is only a matter of time. Like, the Giants can't.
I mean, the Chiefs stink.
They can't. Of course, yeah. I'm not saying these are world beaters that the Giants don't have a chance in. I'm just saying, like, separate the quarterback from the roster. Like, I thought this roster was a lot better. I thought the secondary would be a lot better, especially Holland and Newbin. But both those guys have just made no plays. And these are, like, Paulson Adebo is supposed to be a ball hawk. Like, yeah, he gets beat, but when he gets his hand on the ball, it's going to be an interception. Drop two picks. I asked this question last week, I think it was, like, what advantage does Shane Bowen give this defense?
Like, the coaching staff gives them no advantages. The entire coaching staff. It's not just Bowen. The whole coaching staff gives them no advantages.
Like, if you look at Russ's interception last night and you looked at the play design, it's like, what is this? It's like, what? It didn't make any sense, and he threw it up to Malik Nabers. And again, it's just not a functioning program right now. And if Jackson Dart is not, like, the savior of a franchise, and we've seen those guys pop up, right? I think they leave ownership no choice, but I think the way it is right now is just such a hopeless feeling again, because it's like, this is happening again. Like, we're going through this again, and it's only September. Like, there's still 15 games left for them to embarrass themselves.
Yeah, but we've done this dance before. We're used to it.
But that's the thing. I'm not excited about, like, in 2021, I was excited about doing this dance, right?
Understandably.
Now I'm like, I okay, but yeah, I mean, Brian Daboll and Joe Shane are out of excuses, man. They have to generate. It's unfair to put this on Jackson Dart because he is a rookie and he was not, like, a top 10 pick. He was pick number 25 late in the first round. But not only is Jackson Dart going to have to come in there and have a very short learning curve, but he's going to have to play well and well enough for what is a roster that's not good to win games. And looking at their schedule, it's incredibly tough. So I don't know. Like, I was wondering, like, what is ownership thinking right now? Like, they have this rookie quarterback that they're getting ready to play. And it was a rookie quarterback that they, you know, traded up for back into the first round, and they're going to play this guy. But it's like, what are they expecting? And what is the bar now? Like, what do you do? Because, like I said, it's only week three. Like, there's still 14 more opportunities for this coaching staff to embarrass themselves more. And to me, back-to-back weeks where we saw players sort of look disengaged, especially on defense.
They quit.
So as this continues to pile up, like, what do you do? Because on one hand, you got this head coach who really, really wanted to draft this young quarterback and thinks he can develop him. And one of the reasons why, and the main reason why you kept him as your head coach, is because you wanted to give him the opportunity to draft a quarterback and develop a quarterback and play a quarterback that he chooses. But on the other hand, you have a head coach that his players are clearly showing signs that they don't believe in him, coming off a 3-14 year with a general manager who's, after 4 years, failed to put together a roster competent enough to win you games. And again, you're 0-3, and again, you're off to a slow start. And it's like, damn, like, these two, what, like, these two things that you're juggling, what do you do?
Well, this is why it never made sense. It never made sense to keep Shane Daboll after a 4-13 season. And it made no sense not to start Jackson Dart from week one. Because, listen, I've week after week, I've become far less of a believer in Brian Daboll. I mean, at this point, my belief is 100% gone, because I think the offensive scheme is boring and it sucks. And, you know, their one explosion of offensive production happened against the worst defense in the league on moon balls from Russell Wilson to their 6th overall wide receiver. Like, this is not some magic that Daboll and Kafka are cooking up here. I mean, the offense is absolutely dreadful. At the same time, as a guy who came in, he had a little bit of success with Daniel Jones. They foolishly doubled down on it and then never really had an opportunity to go out and pick a successor. And now that you finally have your handpicked guy in the building after a 4-13 season, you were not afforded the risk of an 0-3 start. Because I think short of not even running the table, but breaking even at 500, there's nothing that Brian Daboll can do at this point to save his job. Which, why, if you ask me, I don't think that the decision to start Russell Wilson the first 3 weeks was his. I really don't.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of agree with you. Like, they were so high on Jackson Dart and so impressed with him coming out of training camp that the original plan was, remember, like, Russell's the starter,
Jameis is the backup.
And the emergency guy is Jackson Dart. They were comfortable enough with Jackson Dart's development through the summer that they moved Jackson Dart up to be the backup quarterback, which it might not mean a lot to some people, but it actually does, because at that point you're comfortable him throwing him into a game, you know, cold turkey against, you know, if Russ gets hurt or something happens to Russ, you're willing to put Jackson
Dart. Or if you bench him. Look what we've seen through the first 3 weeks. We've seen Joe Burrow go down. We've seen J.J. McCarthy go down. Michael Penix was just fucking benched for Kirk Cousins this past week. It happens. We're seeing it all around the league. Brock Purdy is injured. Mac Jones comes in. Like, that's four quarterbacks off the top of my head. I don't even know if there's more. But, like,
Daniels was out too.
There you go. Daniels, Marcus Mariota. That's five. Within 3 weeks, five of these teams are starting backup quarterbacks. Like, this shit happens more. Or not even starting, but four and then one benching.
It's a very common thing that quarterbacks get hurt or get benched.
Sure.
We've seen it this way. So they were comfortable in that opportunity to play Jackson Dart. So it's just you look at their decision making and you're like, man, this is not how a functioning head coach operates. And we haven't talked about something else either. This team continues to look unprepared, undisciplined. They're inconsistent with how they handle accountability with certain players. Like, yeah, we can look at the offense and the scheme and all that, but as a head coach, there's so much more to it. There's another element to it, and he's lacking in there. This is his fourth year as the New York Giants head coach. 4 years in the NFL is a very long time, and his team continues to be undisciplined, continues with the pre-snap penalties. And the crazy part about it was, we saw this in training camp. I have never in my life seen a team in team drills jump offsides or false start as much as the Giants did throughout training camp. And I was there for a week. I saw the way they run their training camp is not what you typically see from NFL teams. I've been to multiple teams' training camps, and comparing it to the Giants, it's a very soft training camp. That probably is the reason why they miss tackles. That's part of the reason why they're not physical, you know, to start the season. It's probably why they get bullied so much at the line of scrimmage, right? Like, they don't, you know, practice the fundamentals of football. And we see it because how they come out week after week after week. And yes, some of it's because they lack talent, but that's not taking the blame off them. This is the roster they built. But another is the simple things that they are failing at. And then the Graham Gano situation. We haven't even hit on that. 1 year and 1 week ago, in week two against Washington, Graham Gano suffered the same exact injury. And he didn't play the majority of the year. Then he came back. Graham Gano, I got a lot of love for Graham Gano. Ethan's got a lot of love for Graham Gano. But they didn't even bring in any competition this summer. Bring in a veteran. You know what else they do during training camp, or what they don't do during training camp? They don't kick field goals. They basically give Graham Gano's leg the entire summer off. The only time he kicks field goals is during preseason games. They don't kick field goals. They really don't. I watched Graham Gano for an entire practice just basically stand around and pretend to swing his leg.
Load managing their kicker.
Yes, in training camp, not in the middle of a season, or you know what I mean, in the beginning, in the training camp where you practice these things. Again, Graham Gano is a great kicker, but they didn't bring in any competition. They don't have like a kicker on their practice squad because they got to know, hey, our kicker's 36 years old who has a history of these kind of nicky-nack injuries popping up. It's the lack of preparation. It's how they manage the roster. These are all signs of why you should not be confident in this regime that they can turn this around. And then, most importantly, just look at the results. Since Brian Daboll started 7-2 in his first year, you know, he is 11-35 as a head coach. 11-33-1 as a head coach. He scored less than 10 points in 14 of those games. Less than 10 points. Teams roll out of bed and score 14 points in the first quarter. Less than 10 points in 14 of those games. Less than 20 in 25 of those games. And he's only scored more than 30 points five times with six different starting quarterbacks. What does that tell you? This is not a, oh, it's the quarterback thing. And one other question. Outside from changing his offensive line coach one time and Davis Webb leaving, right, has there been any significant changes to the offensive coaching staff of, no. Of an offense that has been bottom five in the three
most,
years?
The most all? Significant changes was taking play calling away from Kafka and then giving it back.
And then giving it back. So, like –
And can I just say real quick, so just from like perspective, I'm sure there's numbers to back it up. I was just under the impression that with the new kickoff rules this year, there were going to be more points. It was going to be easier to score points.
Shorter fields, more possessions.
Right. You routinely see guys taking the kickoff, going past the 30 to the 40. Like I've noticed it in a number of different games. I mean, you put on red zone for an hour and you see these kickoffs going almost midfield. That's the Giants the now. Only they, scored they, 6 and 9 points in weeks 1 and weeks 3, respectively, is a joke. It's a joke.
Yeah.
It's on the it's on the quarterback who has not thrown a red zone touchdown.
Well, it's on everybody, but it's
on the special teams. I mean,
everything about this team is infuriating because they have enough talent. And I'm not even saying win these games. Just not be pathetic. Look, the Chiefs have a decent defense. You got to the red zone 3 times last night, and you came away with 2 field goals and a 4th down you didn't go for. And to your point, Weiss, they get bailed out last night because the receiver drops the ball on the 2nd down, and the review turns it to 3rd and long. They're disorganized. They come out of the huddle. The safeties are looking at each other. They reorient each other, and they get beat over the top again. The receiver makes a nice catch. Yeah. The receiver makes a nice catch, sure. I'll give you that. This is 3rd in the game. You get a stop here. You have a chance to cut the ball back and come down and try and win the game. You get beat over the top by a guy who's not good. You know, you're getting cooked by 4th and 5th receivers over Tyquan the top. Thornton. Tyquan Thornton even the, is
that,
cooking
That's
you.
Not even the worst of it. There was a 2nd and 17 play where they run a screen to Juju Smith-Schuster and he gets 15 yards. And that's been the common theme. They get these teams in like 2nd and 14, 2nd and 15, and that 3rd down play becomes a 1st down. Like, how many times have you seen that? They almost put themselves at a disadvantage when they get teams in these 2nd and longs. But another
they play such soft coverage. It is infuriating.
Another example of their incompetence as an organization, how they process things. If you guys remember during the offseason, they were trying to sign. They were willing to pay big money to Will Fries, who went to Minnesota, I think, on a 5-year, I think it was a $90 million contract. He was a big money free agent of the Vikings. The Giants were in that negotiating up until the end. I think Will Fries just chose the Vikings. But after they struck out on Will Fries, on a position they were willing to pay $17, $18 million a year for, do you know what they did? They re-signed Greg Van Roten to a 1-year contract. So they went from, we're willing to spend top dollar to bring in a guard. We know that's how big of a need it is. To, oh, yeah, we're going to go from that to, yeah, we're going to settle for Greg Van Roten on a 1-year deal. It's these kind of roster mismanagement and questionable decisions that have you, like, scratching your head. Last night, they have Andrew Thomas on a snap count. Again, I don't know the difference between 25 snaps and 40 snaps. I don't know how Andrew Thomas is about to go from playing 25 snaps on Sunday night, a week later, he's going to play 50, 60 snaps. I don't see how that week is going to make such a difference. You took him off PUP after the final preseason game to build him up. He doesn't play week 1. He doesn't play week 2. His first game plays 25 snaps. And what do? You play all those 25 snaps in the first half. I got a question for you. Let's say this game is 9-6 in the fourth quarter and Russell Wilson is driving down the field. Well, they can't kick a game-winning field goal because Graham Gano is hurt. They've already messed up there to score a touchdown. And you got a rookie fifth-round pick out there, Marcus Bowe. And let's say he costs you the game because he misses a block, which is understandable. He's a rookie, right? Then what? you played Andrew Thomas's limited snap count all in the first half. You're in the fourth quarter and you don't have your best offensive player or your most important offensive player out there because you mismanaged the snap count. It's these kind of things. And I just want to ask you, what other team have you guys seen make these type of questionable decisions on a consistent basis? What other team, forget about successful, not successful, what other coach operates like this? Have you seen in any other game? You guys watch football all day. Is there any other team where you're like, that team is that, like the Giants do these type of stupid things too? Because I can't think of one.
I mean, the Jets, there were some things. Well, that's the company.
Yeah. The Bears, you know, they got a little bit smarter, but they do still a lot of dumb things last year with Eberflus, right? But look at the teams you mentioned, the Jets, the Browns, right? Like, these are teams that don't win, are embarrassments, have always have the worst record in the league. So, again, these are the things that I constantly see on a week-in and week-out basis where I'm sitting there and I'm like, unless Jackson Dart is a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback, I don't see how this thing gets better. And not just a Hall of Fame quarterback that's going to become one, someone that's going to walk onto the field and be one. And I just don't see it. Justin Herbert walked onto the field as a rookie, right? And he put up insane numbers and you saw the talent. But it didn't lead to wins, right? It didn't lead to wins because they had incompetent coaching staff. They didn't have a general manager in there. The wins came when they brought that. So I'm rooting for Jackson Dart. He's in he's at an incredible disadvantage. It is exciting, the unknown, to finally see a young quarterback out there. But I don't see how that makes Brian Daboll a better head coach. Now,
it doesn't. And all it means is that John Mara gave his vote of confidence to a regime that in all likelihood is not going to survive the year. And they wasted the 25th pick on a quarterback.
If Jackson Dart has a good statistical year and they win five games, I think that's enough. I think where John Mara is right now is he's just looking for a reason to keep these guys. And that reason consists of, let's see Jackson Dart put up solid numbers. Let's win five games. Let's feel positive at the end of the year. Let's not embarrass ourselves. Because remember, a lot of John Mara is not results-based. It's narrative and optics-based, right?
Well, as long as you don't
embarrass me, I'm good. If Jackson Dart's exciting and they're able to run with that, I think he's going to run it back.
The bar for embarrassment is so low. Like, the number of tweets I saw yesterday about the environment at a primetime home game just being absolutely dead. I mean, Jackson Dart only fixes that for so many games.
Yeah, but if they put Jackson Dart in there and there's excitement and they're able to score points and look like able to score points because scoring points and playing good offense sells games, I think that's going to put people in seats. And I think, you know, by November, it could potentially make people forget about the home opener, right? Even if they don't win those games, at least we have this exciting young quarterback that we can build on. I mean, then we saw this in 2019. It didn't save Pat Shurmur's job, but it saved Dave Gettleman's job. So, again, the bar is so low with this ownership group. We saw it after last season. I know people are out there putting together head coach and GM combos and doing all that. But it's only September. That can work in Brian Daboll's favor, and it can also work against Brian Daboll because there's still a lot of games left for him to look more incompetent. On the flip side, you put the young kid out there, and if you know he's able to have games or moments like he had in the preseason, I think it's going to be enough if they just sprinkle through with five wins.
I mean, I think the advantage that they have next week with starting Jackson Dart is that there's limited pro tape on him. I mean, we see this every year from rookie quarterbacks that come out and they light the world on fire, and then actually it turns out they fucking suck. And we're seeing it in real time with C.J. Stroud. We're seeing it this year with Bo Nix, kind of. We're seeing it with Michael Penix, where, okay, the book is out. But
seeing a little bit with Jaden Daniels, too.
Yeah, but I don't know. To me, that's more of a Cliff Kingsbury problem. I mean, the fact that you call it a horizontal raid is hilarious and also very sad, but I think that's more coaching than it is player, as a huge Jaden Daniels fan, unfortunately. But you get those rookie pops, you know. It's not an easy matchup against Harbaugh and Minter, and that defense has been flying all over the place. But what if? I don't know.
I think that if you're looking for the perfect time to play a quarterback or a young quarterback, you're never going to find it, especially when you have
that's been my schedule. Point the entire season. Wise, I mean, I've had this argument since the preseason with these people.
I'm with you on that, Ethan.
You can't put them in because you're going to ruin them. Well, guess what? The offensive line has been at the very worst. They've been average. No one's out here complaining about the Titans ruining Cam Ward. No one's out here complaining that another rookie in recent memory. No one's complaining that Michael Penix is going to get ruined. No one, like, you pick a quarterback in the draft. I would say 60 to 70% of them that are starting in games almost immediately, maybe even a higher number, I don't know, I'm doing this off the top of my head, are top 10 picks, which means they are going to teams that fucking suck. These teams stink. All these quarterbacks, with a few exceptions, are going to bad situations. No one's out there crying, oh, you're going to ruin Caleb Williams. Oh, you're going to ruin Bo Nix. You're going to, like, no. Seldom is the situation perfect.
And we thought the Bears were a great situation for Caleb Williams last year with all the receivers they had and the defense, but that didn't
work out. They need coaching.
Right?
Coaching is hard.
We thought Washington was a very bad place for a young quarterback, right? No talent, and they went to the NFC Championship game, right? So again, it's easy to look at these things and make assumptions, but here's my thing. Okay, you sit him against the Chargers, and you play him against the Saints. His first game against the Saints, his second game is going to be against the Eagles.
Exactly. I did this tweet like a week ago. You don't want to ruin him against the Eagles. You don't want to ruin him against the like Harbaugh's defense. You don't want to ruin him against like there's never going to be a perfect time. It's like having a kid. It's never a perfect time. Just do it.
These young quarterbacks. Yeah, you're right about that. These young quarterbacks, you put them in there and you let them. You see what they can do. The expectation is not for Jackson Dart to go out there in his first game and light up the Chargers or light up the Eagles or whatever. But you want to see the start of the development and where he is at the end of the year. And again, like you said, there's never a perfect time. You try to plan these things. You know when the perfect time was, now looking back on it? Week one.
Because that's what I'm saying.
Washington looks pretty average. Dallas looks like the worst defense the Giants are probably going to face all year.
And the Chiefs
And
stink.
Then week three, the Chiefs struggle offensively. So maybe we should have started in week one, right? For those people that are saying the sit. So
I mean, again, we're singing a totally different tune. I fully, fully believe that we are going to see not perfect, but competent to maybe above average quarterback play from Jackson Dart this upcoming Sunday. And we're going to be looking back saying this team could be 2-2 right now. This team could be 3-1 maybe. I really believe that.
Well, this offense is tailored to what Jackson Dart likes to do. It's not tailored to what Russell Wilson likes to do. Russell Wilson can't throw in the middle of the field. Jackson Dart loved doing that at Ole Miss. So, yeah, you're going to see it. The question is that learning curve, right? Like reading defenses, being able to – those are the things we're going to see. But in terms of, like, the raw talent with Dart, like, he has a good arm. He's great mobile. Arm. He can move. You know, got that competitive
tough son
edge.
Of a bitch.
Young guy. Don't want to see him take hits. But, again, these type of things – that's the unknown is what excites you in terms of like this conversation about we're going to ruin them. Franchise quarterbacks don't get ruined. I hate to break this to you.
It's a great quote.
90% of the time, if the guy's career is a failure, it's probably because he's not good. Now,
and there's one, I think there's one exception to the rule.
Who's
Andrew
that
Luck.
Exception? Yeah, but Andrew Luck was a great quarterback. Nobody ever denied that. He
and
just
they broke him mentally
because of injuries. Yeah, the Colts broke him.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't like the opponents didn't break Andrew Luck. But Andrew Luck accomplished a lot before
he
retired.
Did. Great quarterback.
So, listen.
Stanford GM,
there,
Andrew Luck.
This is the NFL. You're going to play good teams. You're going to play bad teams. The Giants play in a division with a couple of good teams. Eventually, he's going to play the Eagles. I don't see what difference does it make if it's the third game versus the fifth game, right? I don't see what difference does it make if it's, you know, Chargers, then the Saints, and then Saints are the Chargers, right? Like I don't. This doesn't matter to me. We're arguing.
If he comes out,
he's
got to
play.
He's got to play.
It has to play.
If he comes out looking good Sunday, like I should be happy, but I'm going to be so mad. I'm going to be so mad. These fucking idiots waited like till week four, till the season was lost.
They owed it to Russ to play him because I think that was the plan all along, and they went through camp that way. Like Russ took the majority of the first team reps. Where I think they sort of messed up was...
And they signed Russ before they knew that they were going to get Jackson Dart. I get
the the message you sent at the start of training camp was Jackson Dart is going to be inactive to start his NFL career, and Jameis is the backup, and Russ is the starter. Then you jumped Jackson Dart up to the second string, which all indications were you're comfortable with him stepping in there and playing without having like this ramp up period. At that point, it's like, well, you know, if Russ plays bad in one quarter, you're going to see boos. And that's exactly what you saw in the home opener, right? So they made a mistake there. But I got a question for you guys. This benching is coming. I think it's going to be this week. I don't think they're going to trot Russell Wilson back out there. And
it's coming.
And God bless Russ. I got a lot of love for Russell Wilson. I was really, really – part of the reason I was so mad about last week is I wanted Russ to have that moment, right, of that performance. But does Russell Wilson ask for his release after this benching?
I would.
And wouldn't you think that the Giants should grant him that release?
Yeah.
Because they already have their backup quarterback – on the roster for next year. Like Jameis is the quarterback too next year. That's a great contract. Would you not just be like, okay, like, yeah,
Russ, ask him what he wants. If he wants to stay, sure. If he wants to go, sure. Whatever he wants to do. If he wants to be if he doesn't mind being the backup,
I look around the NFL. I look around the NFL with these injuries and these quarterbacks getting hurt. And I think it's only fitting that Russ tries to see if he can hop on one of those teams.
The quarterback market's weird. I mean, who signed Mike White? Miami.
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. Like, you in theory, you would rather have Russell Wilson than Mike White, but like, I think he sticks it out. I think Russ is going to want to stay.
You think so?
I think he'll. I don't think he mind. I think you saw what happened last year in Pittsburgh, where I think there was a real argument they probably should have just stuck with Fields the entire time, just based on upside. I think Russell stick it out. I think he wants to be here.
I think he's out. I could be wrong, but this is go. Remember,
he does love New York though. Russ loves New York.
Great, and I'm sure Sierra likes New York too. But you go back to last year, right? Like, you bench Russ, just like you bench Daniel Jones.
Different situation.
No. But I'm just saying.
Yeah,
that's I know it. What you're saying. That's it. Like, for sure. Tommy DeVito gets hurt. Drew Lock gets hurt. Like Jones is not coming in. Like Russ, if they bench Russ, he's done.
I feel like it's on his attitude.
You think that they should make Jameis the quarterback too to Jackson Dart?
Yeah, I think so. And I agree
with that.
That's probably the play. That's probably the play.
Yeah, and like I mean we've seen the Giants GM do this before where they'll sort of, you know, like listen man, like we appreciate it, we tried, it didn't work out. Let me be a player's GM here. Like what do you want to do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me not make it awkward for you.
Right. Yeah.
I agree.
The one last thing I wanted to say on Dart, because neither of you had mentioned it, and I do think it is worth pointing out. I do think the young, dumb guy who doesn't realize how bad the situation thing is in play here. I think there's a world where he does not realize, oh, shit, this isn't great. But that naivety, I think that can work in your favor. You know, a little bit of that Josh Allen recklessness, like the year two or three Josh Allen craziness, where the Bills weren't that good of a team. But he was trying crazy shit because he didn't realize, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. Right. I think that's in play here. For
that dumb confidence.
Yeah. That dumb, irrational confidence. Like every time I see clips.
Do you see Baker Mayfield and Jackson Dart?
Yes. My pre-draft comp for Jackson Dart was if Jackson Dart is J.J. McCarthy, if J.J. McCarthy thought he was Baker Mayfield. That was my pre-draft comp of Jackson Dart. And I love that. I love that swagger. I love that attitude. Our good friend Monty likes to make fun of me for it. He told me like a couple weeks ago that if J.J. McCarthy grabbed his nuts at the opposing team, I'd be all in on him. And you know what? He's probably correct about that. But listen. Oh,
J.J. McCarthy's got a little wild
side. Not really. He's like, he's got like that. I'm going to meditate on the sidelines. I'm going to talk to my sports psychologist, my therapist.
I think he fooled by the eye perception. Black.
No. God forbid a white boy.
Hype moments in aura.
Yeah. There's, listen,
he's got some lunatic in him. I think you guys are. No, he you got to be a lunatic to overcome what he overcame in week one. No. Not a quarterback should have been broken.
Yeah.
For sure.
Week two.
Yeah. Taking advantage of the Bears secondary. Real tough situation.
Hey, listen, a lot of young quarterbacks wouldn't do that.
Listen, not a lot of young quarterbacks have Kevin O'Connell as their coach. I'm just saying.
I mean,
and he was so dreadful they had to make up a high ankle injury after the game. They told JJ McCarthy, they were like, oh, by the way, you got a high ankle. He's like, I do. And then they benched him for Carson Wentz.
Here's the thing about this is JJ McCarthy's rookie year. He played two solid quarters of football. I think he was bad in the first half. But I think the impressive thing is
he overcame three quarters.
Yeah, he was bad.
He's played eight quarters of football, seven of which were.
But why are we writing? Why are we writing? You know, these people are anointing him, and then like the other half people are already writing him
Weiss,
off.
Weiss. That's what we do. That's what we do. Listen, I can say it because I was a JJ hater pre-draft. I didn't like him. I didn't want him. Right. Same thing with Michael Penix. And what were people doing last year at the end?
I love Michael Penix. I did love Michael Penix a lot.
I think by the numbers, like the second least accurate quarterback last year. But because the Falcons won a few games, the biggest mouth breathers on Giants Twitter were like, see, I can't believe they skipped over Penix. Michael Penix got benched for fucking Kirk Cousins yesterday. He got obliterated by the Panthers' defense. Like, yeah. Listen, yes, it's too soon. A lot of these guys we can't judge. CJ Stroud got anointed the king of Houston after his rookie season. He's been fucking cheeks ever since. So, like,
everybody keeps tweeting that clip of him going up to Caleb Williams.
Oh my god, yeah. I saw a stat that
Michael Penix is 0-4.
Any team the opposing team scores 7 points.
Right, that's insane.
Bad. They have an elite defense this year. Like the Falcons defense is good.
They have a good defense. Yeah, they really took it to Minnesota last week.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't even know where this conversation.
So the gist of the story is don't anoint Jackson Dart after one game.
No.
Or 1 month. Okay, good.
No.
Yeah.
Because I know that's exactly what we're gonna do.
100%, because it's been so long since we've had competent quarterback play.
I don't even need him to be that good. I just need him to give me a reason to be interested.
If you're going to be bad, at least be fun.
Yeah. Here's the scary part, Nick. You ready for this? If he looks average and his numbers are inflated due to, you know, Giants playing from behind a lot, I envision a scenario where
I'll take Blake Bortles. That's fine.
No. Where they run it back and they just dump as much resources into like a 1 year we're making the playoffs type thing. And I think that could end up being a disaster.
I think they need to win a certain number of games for that to be in play. I think it's
5 games and Jackson Dart looks competent.
That's so bad. That's really, really bad.
That's where I think it is. I think
that makes me sad. You know what we should be doing with these rookie quarterbacks? Judge them on year two.
Yeah. I agree.
It's not looking great. It's not.
Well, you don't think he's played well in this?
He was good against Miami. He was not good yesterday. No, he was really bad yesterday.
The Patriots are really bad.
Yeah, they don't have talent. They don't have talent.
But you think Drake May hasn't been impressive?
He's okay. Athleticism gives him a high floor. He has a high floor.
Yeah, but I don't think he's been. And by the way, Vrabel is like if we're talking about the Patriots. I was way more wrong on Vrabel than I was about Drake May. I mean, to have two running backs starting ahead of Travion Henderson, both of whom have historic fumbling issues, and then like one of them fumbles and then you don't immediately go to Travion Henderson. Like they should have won that game yesterday.
They should have.
Oh, yeah.
So bad. So bad. Like he's supposed to be like this disciplinarian football guy, and you got the running back fumbling, the running back fumbling twice, and your quarterback with an awful fumble.
Yeah.
Speaking of running backs, are you guys excited for Cam Scatterby, running back one?
Yes, we haven't really talked about it, but Marshall Chalk is
Marshall Chalk can pass block. He can catch out of the backfield.
He can do everything. He can do everything. I was genuinely afraid when they drafted him, and I got to wrap up in about 5 minutes so we can finish on Marshall Chalk. I was like, we watched him in college. He was unbelievable, but I feel like
he was a good football player.
Yes.
But I remember Toby Gerhardt too.
Right.
Well, that's because Ethan cares so much about the traits. It's like, man, sometimes just watch the guy.
Traits are what matters.
No,
traits are what matters.
Sometimes people are just good football players, and he is obviously a great, excellent football player, right? There's no knocking him. But he's a little slow.
That's the one critique. He's a little big, slow.
Sure, white running back stereotype.
Not everyone's perfect, Nick.
I was quite afraid that the Giants would fall into that trap. And because of the lack of confidence I have in this coaching staff, effectively just use him as some short yardage bruiser. You know, one of the tweets I saw about him coming out was like talking about Cam Scadabo. If you need 6 inches, Cam Scadabo is going to get you 3 yards. If you need 6 yards, Cam Scadabo
cut off his head. He'll cut off his head and stretch it over the line of scrimmage.
Listen, this guy's a fucking gamer. He's a psychopath. Everyone's seen the clips of him from the Giants social media team, from the press conferences. It's like he has this caveman mentality where he sees a camera and he just has to let out a primal yell. I want those type of guys. Zero brain cells, 100% football IQ. I picked him up on waivers for my fantasy team last week. Unfortunately, he was on my bench, and I'm probably going to lose tonight because of it. But I was screaming all game on Twitter. I'm sure you guys saw. Just give him the ball. Like at the point where Russ can't see over the middle, he was atrocious in the red zone. Literally every other play should just be getting this guy the ball. He's excellent in pass protection. What?
He's part of the culture changing.
Yes, right? Undoubtedly.
We envision the Giants will eventually get out of, although that might be. Are you excited about Jackson Dart and Cam Scadabo in your backfield?
100%.
Those are two motherfuckers.
Yes.
Those are two motherfuckers.
I tweeted it on draft night. It's like the juxtaposition between like Jameis and Russ, who are like God-fearing Christians and talking about doing Bible studies in the end zone, versus Jackson Dart and Cam Scadabo, who would drink their opponent's blood on national TV and be proud about it. There is no greater juxtaposition there. Like, those are the kinds of guys that I want.
If James Hudson wasn't like bad, like you could live with the edginess to him. Like, imagine that motherfucker.
Right. If he was Richie Incognito, yeah, sure. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are three motherfuckers you have on the field.
Yeah, but so, that guy is like crazy in a bad way. Scadabo is crazy in a good way.
We didn't talk last night. Did you see Jameis Winston calming him down like his psychiatrist?
Yeah.
Exactly. I love Jameis, man. Every time I see him, put a smile on my face. But we're almost there, guys. Jackson Dart time is coming. I'm very excited for that. I think everyone should be excited for that.
Everyone should be. Yes. Yeah. All right. I think that's it. Let's wrap it up. I think we're back. NYG Weekly for the time being, until it goes back to NYG whenever we feel like it. Subscribe. Follow us on Twitter. We'll talk to you guys after Jackson Dart's first start.